VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today on the program, Katie Weaver and I bring you the Higher Education Report. We look at a problem in the U.S. Not enough college-aged people are in school. After that, Andrew Smith is here with words and their stories. He considers the idea of par on a golf course and how it made its way into our language. And then, Kelly Jean Kelly closes the program with our series on America's presidents. This week, it's James Madison. Now, here's the Higher Education Report. 3 years ago, COVID-19 restrictions caused major changes to the way students experienced college. Instead of learning in classrooms, they took classes online. Instead of living on campus, many students lived at home. The changes made some young people wonder whether a college education was worth it. Today, most college classes are back to normal, yet some young people who decided to delay going to college because of the pandemic are still choosing not to go to school. The rising costs of higher education and fears of student debt are among the reasons more young people are choosing not to attend college. Instead, they are working. Many believe it is the right decision for them. The National Student Clearinghouse notes that the number of people going to college in the U.S. dropped by 8% from 2019 to 2022.
Labor experts are concerned that the drop will hurt the U.S. economy in the long term. A drop in college graduates will reduce the number of workers in career areas from healthcare to information technology. Yet some people who work in education see recent high school graduates as different. Jamia Stokes works for SCORE, an education group in the state of Tennessee. She said students are more realistic about the way they work, about the way they spend their time and their money. Some young people are choosing work over college because they can find jobs that pay well right after high school. The Associated Press spoke to young people in Tennessee who are of college age but not in school. Most are working. One is considering going to college.
Mia Woodard lives in Jackson, a small town in Tennessee between Memphis and Nashville. Woodard said she remembers sitting in her bedroom and trying to fill out college applications online. Today, she wonders if she sent them in successfully. She said she never heard back from any of the colleges. She wonders whether her weak Wi-Fi signal caused the applications to not get sent. Or maybe, she said, she simply failed to provide the right information. Woodard said she did not have much support from her school. It might be because they didn't believe in me, she said. Woodard had hoped to be the first in her family to get a college degree. Today, she works at a restaurant and lives with her dad. She is looking for a second job so she can get her own place to live. She said there is still a chance she will continue her education. Her hope is to study culinary arts. Grayson Hart also lives in Jackson. He said he always imagined going to college. He wanted to be an actor or a teacher. He thought college was the best way to reach his goals, but he changed his mind during the pandemic. 1 year after finishing high school, he is not in college. He applied to schools but decided not to go. Instead, he is running a theater program for children in Jackson. He said he changed his mind about college because he spent 1 year doing a lot of learning on his own during the pandemic. He said he felt free without the responsibilities of going to school. Hart said he wondered why he should pay a lot of money to attend college in return for a piece of paper, a diploma, that isn't going to help with what I'm doing now. Hart said he is not sure what is next for him. I do worry about the future and what that may look like for me, he said. But right now, I'm trying to remind myself that I am good where I'm at and we'll take it one step at a time.
3 years ago, Boone Williams was the kind of student who looked like he was on his way to college. He took difficult classes and got good grades in high school. He was thinking about studying animal science. But when the pandemic closed schools and moved classes online, he said he lost interest. Instead of attending online classes, he went to work at local farms. He worked with horses and cows. I was focusing on making money rather than going to school, he said. Today, he is not in college. Instead, he works on plumbing jobs and is taking classes at night to learn from experts in a trade union in Nashville. He does not make much money right now, but he hopes to earn more in the future as he gets more experience. He thinks he will one day earn more than some of his classmates who did go to college. In the long run, I'm going to be way more set than any of them, he said.
The lack of interest in college is concerning, especially among minority and low-income students. Among students from Tennessee who finished high school in 2021, only 35% of Hispanic students and 44% of Black students entered college. Over half of white students went to college. But there is some thought that interest in college is going up. There was a small increase in the number of students going to college in 2022 compared to the year before. Still, the total number is far lower than before the pandemic. Tennessee already had a problem getting students to continue their education after high school. In 2014, the state made community college free. More and more students started going to college, but today, the number is at its lowest since at least 2009. Vicky Bunch is the head of workforce development for a business group in Jackson. She said she thinks the number of students will stay low so long as they can get paid well right after high school. Students agreed. They said easy access to jobs and concerns about borrowing money have made college seem less appealing. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. In news reports, You can hear about surprising events. You can learn about new technologies, new plans, and big changes. But in today's Words and Their Stories, we consider how to talk about things that do not change, at least not very much. The sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Babies cry when they are hungry. Water turns to ice when the temperature drops below freezing. These are things we expect. In fact, we are so sure about them that we can bank on them. To bank on something means that you are not taking a chance by saying something is going to happen or that something is true. It is a stronger way of saying that you can count on something. And there are some days when we feel like nothing new happened, where today seems almost the same as yesterday. In such a situation, we can say, same old, which is another way of saying, nothing new or different happened.
Now consider people's behavior. Imagine you are planning to spend time with a friend. You agree to meet your friend at a local market, but when you arrive, your friend is not there. After waiting almost an hour, you receive a message on your phone. It says,
"I'm so sorry. I forgot about our meeting. Are you still there?"
At this point, you simply say to yourself, "Par for the course." In this example, par for the course means your friend's behavior was not surprising, but expected. That is because you know your friend often forgets things. But it also means you are not pleased with the behavior. We mostly use par for the course to express both that we do not like a situation and that the situation is the same as what we expected. We can use par for the course to talk about rules or policies we don't like, but also expect. For example, regarding a competition, someone might say,
"The rules are so unfair." Unfortunately, that's just par for the course.
You can also use the expression in a neutral way, that is, with neither a positive nor a negative feeling. This happens when we are trying to make clear that people shouldn't be surprised by something or place too much importance on it. For example, someone might say,
"Security checks at airports are par for the course."
Here, the speaker means,
"Because security checks are normal at airports, you shouldn't be surprised by them."
The word par comes from Latin. It can mean that which is equal. Language experts suspect the expression par for the course came from the game of golf, where par is the expected score of a skilled player for part of the golf course, or the whole course.
Next, we look at an expression in American English. Is that a thing? This question asks if something is new or becoming more common. For example, imagine you travel far from your home. You see a car with unusual lights on its wheels. You wonder if that car is the only one with those special lights. But the next day, you see another car with similar lights. In this situation, you might ask someone who lives in the area, "Is that a thing?" The person can tell you if the lights are unusual or if they are starting to become popular with some people. If it's a trend, the person can simply answer, "Yeah, it's a thing." We don't ask, "Is that a thing?" for something that is already common or expected. For example, you would not say, "Is that a thing?" for an activity like brushing your teeth. However, you could ask the question about a new health trend. For example, in 2023, a person might ask if something is a thing about using virtual reality for health and fitness. That is because the technology is still new and not used by most people. Was today's words and their stories the same old for you? I hope not. Listen for the expressions from today's program as you read and listen to English. Then, let us know what you find by writing to us in the comments section. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English broadcast. You just heard Andrew Smith's story about some interesting English phrases. Andrew is here now to talk about this thing called par, and also a thing. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Thanks, Dan.
So, Andrew, you and I both really like sports, and I see this week's story connects the word par and golf. What else can you tell us about par?
Because par means similar to or at a similar level, we say something is on par with some other thing to show this similarity. For example, the number of people living in France is on par with the number of people living in the UK. Both of those countries have about 68 million people.
Now, you wrote about another expression which speakers of American English use.
You mean the expression, "Is that a thing?"
I do. Thing is one of the most basic words in English, but if you use, "Is that a thing?" that shows some advanced skill with the language.
That's right. And that's because the literal meaning of thing refers to objects like a table or pencil. But "is that a thing?" uses the word in another sense, usually to ask if something is a new trend. "Is that a thing?" relates to people's behavior and culture rather than to objects. Interestingly, while it almost always relates to new trends, the expression itself has only been popular in American English for about the last 30 years or so.
So your parents never used the expression?
No, they didn't. They were way too old for that.
Andrew, we'll just keep that between us. Thanks for spending some time with me today.
You're welcome, Dan.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. James Madison was elected in 1808. He was a capable president who served two terms. But most Americans do not remember Madison for his presidency. They remember him for work he did earlier. After the Revolutionary War, in which the American colonists separated from Britain, Madison proposed that the new United States form a stronger national government. Madison's vision for a three-part government, with an executive, a legislature, and an independent Supreme Court became the basis for the Constitution we still use today. Madison went on to persuade voters to accept the proposed Constitution. He explained how a system of checks and balances would prevent any one part of government from becoming too powerful. And when voters demanded more protection for individual liberties, Madison wrote the amendments that became the Bill of Rights. These actions earned Madison the name Father of the Constitution. Madison did not have the appearance of most politicians. He was a short man with a soft voice who had been sick often as a child. He grew up in a wealthy family in Virginia. He liked to read books and to study. He went to college at the school that later became Princeton University in New Jersey. When the Revolutionary War started, Madison's intelligence and knowledge, as well as family money, helped him participate in debates about independence. Madison also held positions in the new American government he helped create, including as Secretary of State under President Thomas Jefferson. Madison did not have much of a personal life. Many people were surprised when he married a young widow named Dolly Payne Todd. She was 26. He was 43. The couple did not have children, but they raised Mrs. Madison's surviving son together. Stories suggest the two were very happy, although they had different personalities. Dolly Madison was energetic, warm, and social. She loved to throw parties, and her guests loved to attend them. Historian Catherine Algor notes, Dolly Madison often dressed dramatically, including wearing turbans covered with peacock feathers. Her weekly gatherings at the president's house were so crowded that they became known as squeezes. As First Lady, Dolly Madison did not follow her husband's idea of a strict separation of powers. She invited officials from all parts of the government to her parties, as well as people from opposing political groups. Algor says, Dolly Madison succeeded in making the president's house a symbol of unity and glamour. She remains one of the best known and most loved first ladies in U.S. history. But his wife's popularity could not prevent Madison from facing a difficult presidency. During his first term, the U.S. faced increasingly tense relations with Britain. Madison accused the British of interfering with international trade and seizing American sailors. At the same time, European American settlers blamed the British for helping native tribes fight against them. But the settlers had violated treaties between the U.S. government and the Native Americans. In 1811, Native warriors attacked U.S. soldiers at the Battle of Tippecanoe in today's state of Indiana. A U.S. general named William Henry Harrison led his troops to fight back. The result was not clear, but Harrison declared victory. The following year, Madison proposed war against Britain. Congress approved. The War of 1812 began. For most of the war, American forces failed. But in 1813, they had two notable victories in Canada. They captured and burned the city of York in Toronto. And General Harrison had another major fight with Native warriors at the Battle of the Thames. The Native Americans were defeated. The leader of the tribal alliance, Tecumseh, died from the wounds he received there. That loss ended, for the most part, the efforts of Eastern Native American tribes to push back white settlers. In 1814, the war turned again. British soldiers took the U.S. capital of Washington, D.C. Madison had already left the president's house to meet with generals in the field. Dolly Madison remained. But when she learned the British were approaching quickly, she acted. She famously ordered her servants, as well as a 15-year-old house slave named Paul Jennings, to take down a painting of George Washington. The servants, slaves, first lady, and painting all escaped to safety. Commanders of the British force took a group of men to the Capitol building and set it on fire. Then they went to the president's house. They found the table set for dinner. The British commanders stopped to toast the president before they burned his home. By the time Washington, D.C. burned, American and British officials were already in peace talks. But in the U.S., one more major battle was being fought. A militia general named Andrew Jackson led a ragtag army against a British attack in New Orleans, Louisiana. The Americans' rain of bullets and shells was so deadly that only one British soldier reached the top of the American defenses. When the British finally withdrew, they left behind more than 2,000 dead and wounded. 500 other British soldiers had been captured. 13 Americans were killed. The Battle of New Orleans was considered a great victory for the U.S. However, it was not necessary. The war had ended by treaty 2 weeks earlier. The War of 1812 almost bankrupted the U.S. government and cost the lives of tens of thousands of soldiers. It was devastating for many Native Americans. It did provide a chance for several thousand slaves to escape to freedom by serving in the British military. But it did nothing to improve the lives of most of 1 million enslaved people in the U.S. at the time. Despite all this, the war united most of the country. Albert Gallatin, Madison's Treasury Secretary, said people felt more American after the war. They acted more like a nation, he said. The song that would become the country's national anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner, was written during the War of 1812. Madison benefited from most people's belief that the war was a success. The end of his second term began what historians call the era of good feelings. Madison left the presidency more popular than when he had started it. After he retired, Madison lived on his Virginia estate for nearly another 20 years. He died in his bed at age 85. A niece was in the room. She says that a strange look passed her uncle's face. She asked him what was wrong. Madison's last words were, "Nothing more than a change of mind, my dear. I always talk better lying down." I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
Thank you, Kelly, for that report on the fourth U.S. president, James Madison. And thanks to Andrew Smith for his work on words and their stories, and Katie Weaver for assisting on the higher education report. That's the Learning English broadcast for today. Thank you for listening. We hope you listen again tomorrow. For more, please visit our website at learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Dan Friedell.